Chapter 4. An Address by Beloved Mary, Mother of Jesus, February 5, 1954. On Importance of Meditation and Contemplation, Importance of Gathered Momentums and Decrees. More on Mary's Service of Forming Sacred Heart, Great Initiation of Jesus, Jesus' Visitation with Mary and Disciples for 40 Days After Resurrection. Beloved children, I come to bring to you my love and gratitude for your deep interest in life and to endeavor through conveyed consciousness to show you ways and means by which your individual worlds might again be set into divine order. I do this that you may find yourselves conductors of that presence of God which mentally you have accepted as filling this universe, but which requires the confirmation of your feelings to be ever active through you into this world of form. In a measure, each of you is a bridge conducting the consciousness of the inner realms into the world of form and acting as mediators, even as I do at inner levels, between the fullness of God and the intelligences which represent Him and the mass mind. Mankind may rebel all they wish at the necessity for mediation between the fullness of the Godhead and the outer consciousness. However, the law of life and the intelligence that governs the great universal scheme of creation has provided these step-down transformers in mercy. This is done so that those who voluntarily and consciously descended into the pit might have a chain of energy over which the blessings, the mercy, and the very spiritual life which sustains their souls may flow. In time, over such a chain of energy, when the voluntary energies of their own world so desire, they may ascend again into their rightful estate and assume their places as sons and daughters of the Most High Living God. Even as the spider weaves out of his body the web and uses it as a means of transportation to and fro, so is the bridge of life energy woven out of the very essence of divinity. It is carried by the messengers and the life streams who may have only a partial connection with the realm of perfection, in order to infiltrate the consciousness, stimulate a love for truth, and wherever possible, act as instruments of faith by which works may be manifest. Each of you has developed, over the ages and through the centuries, certain momentums that make you conductors for specific qualities that represent the nature of God. These momentums are your individual and voluntary gift to life. They are the treasures stored up in heaven. They are that part of you which we can use to externalize our work and service in the world of form. They are the only part of any life stream with which we are concerned. It is our desire at all times to emphasize and externalize more and more of the nature of God through the leaven in the individual life stream. This leaven may be faith, purity, peace, happiness, or it may be a momentum of teaching or healing. These examples are just to give you a bird's eye picture, you might say, of the way we in the hierarchy work in drawing around ourselves certain life streams who we feel can best serve the divine plan in cooperation with our life. We then endeavor to connect our energies with these individuals through whatever means are at hand. We connect our energies with mankind by radiation, through the contemplation by your blessed selves in thinking upon our presence. We also connect our radiation with your consciousness through the spoken word at the rare intervals when life allows us this privilege. In every instance, every perfected being who lives within the kingdom contacts unascended beings solely to expand the borders of the kingdom, to expand the radiation of perfection, and to draw more light and more of the God gifts into this world of form, into the psychic and astral realm which forms the atmosphere of your planet. My service to life has been connected with the creation of the heart through which the sacred fire is focused into the physical appearance world, giving identity and being to a personality for a time. It is an interesting service that perhaps can be elaborated upon. You use it yourselves in this activity to create a heart center made up of living cells, living intelligent beings having free will. However, this is different from the heart made up of intelligent energy sworn to obedience, which is the physical heart of an individual. When the life stream is given the grant of securing a new earth body, and when the lords of karma have passed on it, that life stream is drawn into my temple. Together we look over the substance and energy which the soul has used, perhaps through eons of time. This is the personal heritage endowed by nature to that soul to form the envelope in which it must function. As I have said before, we endeavor first to fashion from that elemental substance the heart, which is the chalice for the immortal threefold flame of life. The heart cells in the physical body are the most highly developed of the elemental substances that make up the physical form, because in the course of their service to life, they require more resistance and more durability in order to stand the beat which gives life to the physical body. Therefore, from among all the elemental substance which will form the flesh garment, the most highly developed electrons are used in the heart. These are drawn into the body of the prospective mother and become part of the flesh of her form, even before conception takes place. Then, through that marvelous intelligence of the builders of form, the heart cells belonging to the new soul are segregated from the body of the mother, always discarding the substance which is of the parent. In this way, the substance which is of the new soul makes this exquisite chalice enfolding the threefold flame of life. It is such a beautiful, mathematical, and scientifically accurate process that I would love to show you in pictures on a screen the precision with which the builders of form magnetize the substance belonging to the incoming soul and cast off again, again, and again, one cell out of every two until this heart is formed. In exactly the same measure and manner, the cells that are to form the spiritual heart of a community, a movement, a great nation, a planet, a universe, or a galaxy are selected from the life streams who have developed the greatest endurance and the greatest purity. These have earned through the ages of time the privilege and honor of forming the canopy of protection around the sacred fire which is to be drawn forth and expanded for the blessing of the masses. From the great body of mankind, there are not available too many cells that can be used for a spiritual heart. From within the spiritually attuned and elect, we find seven distinct types of individual momentums and consciousness, which could be utilized in the seven ganglionic centers of the spiritual body of the Christ. These people respond to the impetus of a new activity. They know that they are destined, you might say, to become a part of some vital organ in a great current endeavor, whether it be a world movement or a local political activity. In that response, they sometimes apply for a position within the heart, although they belong to another center. The same spiritual segregation goes on constantly, drawing in the heart cells, purifying them, fitting them one by one into their perfect place, then endeavoring harmoniously, if possible, to draw the other cells into their own vital organism. This is the activity in which you are engaged today, beloved ones. More or less, you are the substance being formed by the hands and hearts of intelligences greater than your own. In this great scheme of things, each one has his perfect place. We who can see have designed so carefully the creation of the spiritual heart. This will be the supplier of the energies to vitalize this great spiritual body that is to be the cosmic Christ of the future. made up of every one of the 10 billion souls destined to incarnate and develop mastery on the earth. The creation of a heart is the most crucial point in the creation of a physical organism. It is also a most crucial point in the creation of a spiritual organization. It requires tremendous application upon the part of each and every life stream who has been summoned by the law and who has been even loosely fitted into the design. As I have been honored this year by being given opportunity to reach the masses, I am also honored by the opportunity of working with those of you who choose to see the design behind the seeming chaos and confusion. As my own momentum allows and the wisdom of my centuries of forming hearts permits, I shall endeavor to help you in your task. In the physical body, if at the time of gestation the cells that are to form the seven great centers might not polarize properly for some reason or other, or are not held within their orbit perfectly, you have a physical instrument of incarnation that is defective in one or many ways. The spiritual sorting, wherein every life stream takes his perfect place and abides therein, is essential before we can expand the endeavor to raise and redeem the masses and purify all discordantly qualified functions in the spiritual body of the race. We are in a secret and sacred time, a time when I, myself, remembering my own experience, suggest that you ponder these things in your heart. Pray on them. Ask the grace of your own Christ self to illumine them to you, and then strain not, but endeavor to be the best cell that you can in your appointed place. I have thought it would be a pleasurable gift to life this year to endeavor to record some of the heretofore unchronicled experiences of our life in Judea. From time to time, as opportunity permits, I shall bring to your remembrance certain of these homely pictures and scenes. Prior to the great initiation of our blessed Jesus, we used to sit together in comparative privacy in those few moments we sometimes had when there were no demands for assistance from the public. We talked about the ways and means by which we could best perpetuate the truth, preserve the clarity of Jesus' message, and give it to posterity as a workable law. During the years of my son's life, I dedicated myself almost entirely to the holding of that immaculate God concept for him. I did not engage in any extraneous services except those required of my household. I endeavored to live in a state of constant contemplation of his divine manhood, emphasizing his mastery through the pressure of my own concentrated thought and feeling. After the Blessed Joseph was removed from the screen of life, I felt a double responsibility in the holding of this immaculate concept. I can tell you sincerely that it was not without much personal regret that I parted from the great strength, the great serenity and dignity of Joseph to walk that path more or less alone. However, the law of life and the lords of karma determined it to be so, and when his mission was accomplished, he, like all the others before him, folded his robes about him and returned into the heart of the Father. It was my opportunity to remain. Sometimes Jesus and I would sit together in the evening and talk over the various points that were to be emphasized through his ministry. More than once, we discussed the necessity of passing through the appearance of death in order to prove the immortality of life, and that man, through his own consciousness, might transcend death and master a garment which, to all intents and appearances, had lost its vitality. In the retreat where this initiation takes place, for instance at Luxor, it is comparatively easy for the highly trained initiate to withdraw the senses from contact with the world about him and suspend the breath so that, to all intents and purposes, the body is dead. However, to perform this act consciously amid hundreds of vicious and uncontrolled consciousnesses is an initiation of a different sort. Yet the outer consciousness is such that unless mankind themselves actually performed and executed the death sentence, they would never have believed that the resurrection was authentic and that it was not the trick of a faker or a manifestation of hypnosis. I will tell you frankly, neither Jesus nor myself relished the necessity of having him pass through this great service to life. When he did ask that the cup be taken from him, it was because none, ascended or unascended, knew for a certainty that victory would be assured through a public demonstration. You see, through such a demonstration, all of the astral and psychic viciousness that had accumulated since the fall of man was directed through those embodied individuals who allowed themselves to be used as pawns of that force. They acted it out on the screen of life, endeavoring to destroy the serenity and equanimity of the initiate. Not only the pitiful masses who opened themselves to those forces, but the far more subtle and powerful influences that wished to destroy the victory of that mission were something with which to be reckoned. From the time that the first so-called miracle at Cana placed Jesus' name before the people, through the days of Golgotha, I made what you would call today, in the terms of the church, a perpetual novena. I spent hours, every available moment that I was not attending to the necessities to keep our bodies alive, in contemplation and in prayer for the fulfillment of the victory of the resurrection through him. Luke, one of the disciples, was a physician and had been privately initiated by Jesus in some of the subtle activities connected with healing. Yet he would often say, "I do not believe it can be done. However, as you know, it was done beautifully with the assistance of the great Maha Chohan and the beloved friends, ascended and otherwise." The memory and the glory of that experience remains to this day. I speak of this only because you might wonder why we did not plan more for the future. Our minds and hearts were more or less concentrated on making this mission so dynamically and positively impressed upon and embedded in the consciousness of the people that somehow we didn't think too far beyond the resurrection morning. Those of you who were close by in those years know that the mission of Jesus was deeply recorded in the etheric bodies which you carry. Also, the victories and the miracles recorded in writing the books of the Bible, which have been a pattern for the people up to the present day. These records are to be revivified now and brought forth as a positive proof of his truths and his great cosmic service to life. However, as we drew closer to that final pageant, Jesus and I decided between us that I should return to Bethany. You see, in Bethany, we knew almost the only happiness during those difficult days. We knew home there. We knew the sweetness of the flowers and the joy of friendship that was untouched by desire for personal gain. We used to sit there and just rejoice in the presence of God and of each other. Jesus said, "Mother, in Bethany, I think you and those who will remain can best live out those years yet allotted you. If the law permits, I shall visit you there from time to time, and to the best of my ability convey to you and those of my heart friends the laws which will strengthen and assist you to help the people." So, on that day at Calvary, when the hours of trial were accomplished, John and I walked down that hill. Remembering our blessed Jesus' admonition, John took me back to Bethany, and the other disciples joined us there shortly after Easter morning. There we had the exquisite association with each other in the 40 days before the ascension, which time was given us by the karmic board as a grant of mercy. If the disciples and the heart-sore believers had been denied that association of the mystical presence of Jesus for those 40 days, I think they could not have held the faith. The resurrection morn was a very small instant. It could have been, the human mind would say, conjured up out of hope. But for 40 long days, we had a visitation every day. Sometimes we had just minutes, sometimes an hour with our beloved, and so the Ascension Day was not as difficult a parting as was Good Friday. The story of our stay in Bethany and how we devised the plan to set the Christian era into action, I am going to endeavor to draw forth for you as quickly as time will permit and your energies allow me the freedom to enter your worlds. It is a pleasant recital, a happy and peaceful one. It is about a time when Jesus did come, oh yes, very often, and talked with us. A time when we recorded many truths. A time when Peter, James, and John wrote gospels that remain hidden to this day. They will one day come forth as the mystical and inner teachings of the Christ. My story is also about a time when healings were manifested, oh, in a simple and unostentatious way, perhaps. A time when those who loved my son chose to embody his teachings in learning the intricacies of mystical healing. At that time, I also wrote certain treatises for posterity, which I hope to bring to your attention at a later date. This was a time when ages yet unborn were unfolded before us, from the free heart and spirit of the one we called Master and Friend. Bethany will always hold a place in my heart and the hearts of all who were part of it there. This morning, I have come primarily to bring you peace, beloved ones, to confirm the Ascended Master's faith in your light, to confirm the trust and belief of the Brotherhood in your spiritual integrity, and to tell you, each one, that you are precious beyond words in the sight of God. This may seem of very little import to human senses, but the registration of the outer thoughts and feelings of the people is no measure for that which is God confirmed. Beloved children, it is a beautiful thing to look at hearts you fashioned 30, 40, 50 years ago and see them so little changed. In many cases, to see the crystal light having raised the vibratory action of every cell. It is a beautiful thing when one gives a lovely piece of handiwork to any of God's children and finds it sustained in grace, often burnished by the light and fire of suffering until it is a more beautiful chalice. One day, when you lay these bodies down and carry the replica of that heart into the halls of karma, it will be lovely to see it with the light shining through, containing within it the harvest of your service in all your embodiments. I, for one, am looking forward to that day with great joy. Thank you, and God bless you.